Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langston.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you, patrons, including John M., who recently upped his pledge, as well as Gavin Driver, Luke Plasmeyer, lots and lots of other people, as well as everyone joining us live in our chat room in Discord right now, including Charlotte and John. Luke's here as well, Mike, Nick. Pangolin Sandwich, and everyone else, thank you however you support us, and you can get our Patreon exclusive Extra Message, which is a weekly sister show we do for patrons exclusively, and that is available at patreon.com/UK Tech. Ian, I want to start by talking about things that have two wheels on them. Would you like to think about what that is?
Is it Heelys? You know, the trainers with built-in roller skates?
No, although I've never understood how they are somehow street legal and electric scooters aren't. I mean, why would you put wheels underneath a five-year-old girl next to a road?
I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
It's scooters, electric scooters, because the government has said new laws could see people using electric scooters on UK roads as soon as June. That's because there's an update to the rules, which has been announced as something of a result, I think, of the coronavirus-related efforts to get people moving, but without cramming them onto public transport. And the government said as part of this review, e-scooter trials will be brought forward to June when they were meant to start only next year. So this is a huge boon for the e-scooter evangelists of the world, of which I am one, with a caveat, and I'll come to that. So originally, these trials were supposed to take place in four zones. They were called future transport zones, and this was going to be a very limited number of places next year where people could try out scooters, and the government was going to learn from that experience. But now, any locale in the UK can start trialling rentals. The government said it wants to assess the benefits as well as their impact on public space and transportation and all those sorts of things, but with the potential of rental vehicles being on UK roads as early still as next month. So this is being massively expedited. So two things about this. Ian, I want to come to yours first so we can balance out the conversation. And then I'm going to give 2 points, a pro and a very rare against in terms of e-scooters from my mouth.
Sure.
But what is your initial take on this?
I remain broadly positive about it. I think that making them legal on the roads will mean that people on them will use the roads rather than doing what they do now, which is kind of bluffing it and being on the pavement. I think that's the biggest risk. I'm not so concerned with people being, and this applies mostly to London because it's where I have most of my experience. I don't know how this will work in other cities that are maybe faster moving, but London is very slow. It would be very, very difficult. I mean, not difficult. It would be quite easy for someone to get knocked off a scooter, but it's never going to be a high speed impact. So London, I feel, is an ideal place. Everything moves at a very slow pace. It seems perfectly reasonable to have bikes and scooters coexisting on the roads. They can probably broadly move at roughly the same speed in some circumstances, depending on the speed of the cyclist and the particular scooter. But I really can't see a problem with it. I can't see why it was ever a problem in the first place. I feel like these things should be legal until such time as there's a reason for them to be illegal. And so I'm for it. And I think, you know, anything that helps people, especially now we're being told that we can't use public transport, but we should go back to work if we're needed in the office, makes perfect sense. People won't be so reliant on the tube or buses if they're able to just get on a scooter and scoot to work. So, yeah, it's come at a good time. It's a good idea. I have no problem with it.
Okay, well, so I have a history of being something of an evangelist for e-scooters. I do own a couple myself, and normally I am very much in favour of any change to legislation that allows them to go on roads because, like you, I think if used safely, they can be a great form of transport, particularly for people who are traveling to and from meetings, which I have to do a lot as part of my job, because cycling does make you a bit sweaty. And if you don't have access to showers or change of clothes or something like that, particularly in the summer months, then it's not necessarily the most... Yeah, it's just not super, super pleasant. And scooters are a nice alternative for that reason. They are also quick, but they can be speed limited. So the companies that put these on the streets, that's companies like Bird and Lime and Voy and Tier and others, they can and do limit them based on local requirements. So
now, quick
it
question.
Might be...
Is there anything in the legislation that has a speed requirement for these things?
Well, it hasn't been outlined yet, but I would assume that from the get-go they'll follow the standards in other parts of the world, which is usually something around 15 kilometers an hour. So they're not they're not crazy fast, but they're competitive with bicycles. But you're not going to be able to go so fast on them that if you get hit, it's going to kill you, which we've seen with bicycles. Yeah.
Now we did see that very sad incident, didn't we, where someone was on a scooter that they'd basically made themselves and they collided with a pedestrian who wasn't looking where she was going and stepped out in front of it. But I mean, you know, it was tragic no matter how you look at it. But yeah, you know, so obviously, and again, that's another plus point, right? If there are easily available scooters on the roads for people to use, rentals, then there won't be so many people going, oh, I'll buy one from China that doesn't have any restrictions on it. So that's probably another good thing.
Well, the downside to this, and this is something I think that everybody needs to be vigilant about when these are being tested, is that under normal circumstances, as you said earlier, London moves very, very slowly because it's incredibly congested. There are lots and lots of cars and lots of bicycles and lots of people. However, at the moment, if you see any pictures of the roads, they are a barren, empty wasteland, apart from some buses. So there is a risk that scooters will be deployed on roads and able to go much, much faster than they ordinarily would. And that could potentially be problematic. It may be the exact opposite. And because there's so much more space, they can go faster, but also be further away from hazards such as people or cars. But I definitely think that we're not going to be comparing apples to apples when we're looking at what how the public use them now compared to say how the public would use them in a year's time or would have used them a year in the past, and that needs to be taken into account.
But what I would say about that is it feels like this is a good time to do it for that reason as well, because it means that people will have emptier roads to contend with, which means that they'll be able to get themselves to a point where they feel comfortable on the scooter and they won't be so nervous, and then you know, when the traffic starts to get busy again, they'll be a lot more in control of the device. Does that make sense?
That makes complete sense. I can see it happening either way, but I just think it's something that we have to keep in mind.
Sure.
And the other thing that we have to keep in mind as well is that for some people, there is such a huge novelty aspect to scooters. More so, I think, than electric bikes, because people have had access to bikes fairly regularly for many, many years, whether public or private. And electric scooters are still relatively new and definitely very novel for a lot of people. And so, again, there's a risk that people jumping on these for the very first time, particularly when they're maybe seeing empty roads and thinking, hey, this is an opportunity to get out there and play around a bit, maybe that will present a unfavorable image initially that could work against any kind of legislation, or it could impose much, much stricter legislation that actually doesn't let the device or the people who would use them sensibly flourish in the same way that maybe they otherwise would. Now, these are all things that could well have happened in other countries. It may make no difference that we're doing it now during a lockdown than a year ago when we didn't. But I just think that there are some mitigating circumstances that I think will affect how people use a scooter, and we need to at least keep those in mind when people are making legislation, for better or for worse. I'd love to see them on the streets if controlled and if done safely and at safe speeds and with people encouraged to follow the same rules as cyclists and not use them as toys, because that they are really fun, and when something's fun, it's often easy to abuse. For people to abuse that when they're drunk, and we've seen problems
well,
with that.
I mean, like as with bikes, I'm not going to pretend it doesn't happen. I'm not going to pretend that I haven't had a few drinks and, you know, got a hired bike or whatever, and cycled. But I think it just requires a bit of sense, doesn't it? You know, if you're gonna have a load of sauce and then get on a bike or a scooter, then you're going to struggle. And I think the police need to be super aware of that. I don't know what the law is on it, but I don't see that it should be a problem for them to say this is just not on.
Well, the final thing is that the e-scooter industry, for anyone who hasn't been keeping up to date with this, is actually in a massive turmoil, enormously. There are just tons and tons of layoffs happening around the world. There are companies consolidating, going out of business. It's basically an absolute nightmare to be a scooter rental company right now. And if you want to have a look at how bad this can be, go and have a look at some of the recent stories I've written about for Bloomberg about Lime, if you want to see the extent of just how bad this is.
Are they struggling then, Lime?
I mean, it's catastrophic. Yeah, I mean, in some markets, scooter companies have seen like a 98-99% drop in customer numbers. Like, no business can survive when almost 100% of their customers have stopped using their product. Like, it's unsustainable. And it was already incredibly bad in terms of unit economics running a scooter company. So to take them all off the road as well, it's a nightmare. So we'll include a link to that in the show notes if you want to read into it. But it's the fact that the UK, which could be such a massive market for these companies, is trialing much earlier and at a time where some of these companies are in absolute turmoil and existential crisis. Maybe it could be a great opportunity for them. It's certainly something I'm going to be looking into over the next few days. So maybe we'll talk about this again in a week or two.
Good.
But if you have any opinions on the e-scooter legislative changes being proposed, do let us know at hello@uktechshow.com. Oh, goodness me, I'm sorry. Choking on my own sign-off. The Register wrote this week that the surge of furloughed and remote workers caused by the recent COVID-19 lockdown has had only a modest impact on the UK's broadband speeds. This was per a new report from regulator Ofcom. On average, download speeds declined by just 2% apparently in the week immediately following the imposition of the lockdown, which was UK-wide, let's not forget, on the 23rd of March when compared with the week ending March the 8th. However, there is significant variation between the different providers, and the Register noted this as well. It said that the biggest fall was actually seen by users of Virgin Media, who saw speeds drop by about 10% in that time period, whereas EE, which is owned by BT, it saw its broadband speeds increase ever so slightly. So really quite different between the two. On March the 20th, 3 days before the lockdown was formally imposed at least, BT reported that weekday traffic on its network was actually up between about 35% and 60%, depending on the day and time. Virgin Media reported similar numbers on the day of lockdown after the UK schools closed, and they said at the time that daytime traffic had soared up 90%. Again, this is according still to the Register's write-up. Now, Ofcom attributes this all to like the resilience being shown by broadband providers to scale, but I think what would be interesting to think about is we all kind of knew, or certainly expected with good reason for believing it, that a lockdown was going to happen. So some of these companies would have been able to go out and say, we're expecting massive demand, let's make sure we can cope with it. Whereas we've seen in the past, when there have been things like gigantic game patches for things like Call of Duty, they again have massive spikes that aren't, or certainly in the past, haven't always been prepared for and have resulted in network slowdowns. So there's a lot going on. It seems that broadband here has held up, but we've also seen streaming providers cut bit rates. So that would take usage down, even if overall usage in terms of number of people was going up. So I don't know. It would the interesting numbers, I thought anyway, Ian. Or
well, interesting.
Do you have a contribute?
Interesting that there's no clear answer. really. It seems to be all over the place. I mean, I can tell you that my experience with Virgin has been atrocious during this period. The internet connectivity has been up and down like a yo-yo, frankly. But it's been beset by other problems. Speed's one issue. I can live without it running at full speed, although I do resent paying full price for not full speed. That has to be said. But it's more about, you know, occasional latency problems, weird disconnects, a lot of issues around that, which I don't understand at all. But I think it sounds to me like, honestly, the networks are well enough designed for these companies to be able to cope relatively comfortably. Perhaps the issues are more down to the fact that engineers are less able to visit and therefore problems might not be addressed as quickly as they might otherwise be.
That's very true. I mean, my overall reason for wanting to talk about this is really to kind of bookend what we talked about several weeks ago when the lockdown was first announced, which was basically whether our infrastructure nationally was going to be able to cope, whether it was going to be resilient. And I think the numbers released by Ofcom combined with our experience is that, to be honest, the country's held up pretty well, certainly in terms of the main providers. Now, in our live chat room, John pointed out that Sky Broadband has had national drop-offs three times in the last month. And additionally, I have noticed that Virgin Media has had nationwide outages as well. But they've been fairly short-lived, even if reasonably regular. And my speeds haven't really suffered at all. I noticed one day I was only hitting about 300 megabits down. But that is still very, very, very usable and could also have been just two of my devices were downloading something big when I did the speed test. That's always possible. In general, it's been absolutely fine and great.
Yeah, well, lucky you. I'm very sour about the whole thing. You know, mostly it's been fine, but, you know, it's annoying when it goes down or it's unusable or when they don't communicate what the problems are. But, you know, yeah, I suppose we should be grateful that it's operated pretty much reliably without, you know, too much stress. So I suppose I am kind of grateful.
You are, aren't you, mate? I can tell that underneath your thick exterior of cynicism, there is a grateful and indeed highly attractive and well-smelling individual just desperate to get out.
Yes, true. That is true. I mean, yes. Thanks, I guess.
You're welcome. You're welcome. That was just a little sideways compliment because you actually smell great. I've never thought Ian smells bad. It's one of the things I miss because of this lockdown is I don't get to smell you when you walk past.
One tries, after all. I mean, it's worth trying to, you know, maintain a decent odour, isn't it? For the sake of others as much as my own sanity. Mike in the chat said he's had a reasonable experience with Virgin Media. His router did give out, but they got an engineer within 4 days. I'm very conscious of the fact that my router probably needs to be replaced. It's definitely less reliable than it used to be. I wish Virgin would just let me buy my own cable modem, really, because I'm sure I could get something a lot better than what they provide. But of course, they don't. I'd like to see Ofcom look at that as well at some point. I don't think it's reasonable that you should be forced into using their equipment when there's really no reason. It is a global standard, after all.
I have to say, I don't know what my current router is. It's a Virgin provided one.
It'll be the three.
Right. I actually really like it. The speed for me, the speeds have been great. I mean, I hardwire a few things. Like my Mac and my gaming PC are both hardwired, but the speeds are pretty good. It doesn't drop out, and I have a lot of devices here.
I think they have problems with age. They definitely don't last forever. And I've had mine a relatively long time, I guess. And who knows, it might not have been new when I got it. I'm sure they rarely are. But also, it was built on a very bad chipset. It was built on an Intel processor that's just terrible. And they've not worked as they should have done since the start. There's a vulnerability to them whereby it takes a very, very small amount of inbound malicious packets to knock them off. Offline. In fact, I think I saw one thing that said it was as little as a megabit per second of the right kind of packets would take that router down. So if you get DDoSed, then it's bad. They did do patches and stuff like that, but fundamentally it's built on a bad chipset. Everyone knows it's a bad chipset. Virgin has a new one that they roll out when you get gigabit, but there's no plans currently to release that onto the lower tiers, which is a shame. because they're causing themselves problems, frankly. The fact that that modem is cack is a bad sign, and they should look at, you know, getting new ones out to people, especially those of us on faster products.
Speaking of gigabit, would you like to know something that annoyed me recently?
I'd love to, yeah. I feel like it's been all me being annoyed today, and I'd love to hear about your irritations.
I had a email that my mother passed to me,
sure,
from Openreach, saying that her little hamlet in Buxton, or near Buxton in Derbyshire, has been wired up with fibre to the premises. That's a gigabit down,
yeah,
on some providers. At a hell of a cost, I may add.
Yeah.
But it is very, very annoying that my mum's little hamlet is now able to get gigabit fibre to the premises, and stuck here on a paltry 400 megabits down.
Were they struggling before to get good quality broadband?
Yeah, it's, to use your term just now, cack. She uses a microwave connection.
Oh, really?
On the side of the house, yeah.
Well, you see, that makes sense then, doesn't it? Like, I mean, you can sort of see the logic behind that. If you've got places where they haven't had good broadband for a really long time, there's lots of people there paying a lot of money. If you're a company, you think, well, actually, wiring that up would mean that all of those people would switch from those more expensive providers. They'd view our product as more affordable and better value for money. They'll jump on it. So actually, you can sort of see that it makes financial sense. And also, you know, if you've been suffering from ropey broadband for the last 10 years, you're probably due a break, frankly. So I kind of support it.
Everyone in the chat room has broadband that seems significantly slower than mine. So I now feel kind of guilty whinging about,
I mean, you're not
gigabit
whinging, but you, I mean, I admit that you, I'm sure everyone would like gigabit. I personally, I'm fine. I don't mind my broadband when it works properly. 200 megabits is probably about as fast as I particularly need at the moment. I'm not saying I wouldn't take faster, but I'm also not really prepared to, you know, put any more money into it, frankly. But, you know, yeah, most people on BT products are not getting over 80 megabits per second, are they? And that's probably fast enough for most people. But, you know, Virgin customers are almost all on 100 meg. So
Charlotte in the chat room says her internet is fine, but when she's uploading Instagram videos, the whole internet dies. Now, that could very easily be the router rather than just the internet connection, because some of those routers are just completely incapable of dealing with a maxed out connection, and you may very easily max out your upload sending up big videos.
I'll give you an example of something that will bring down my router, absolutely guaranteed. And that's if you fire up a torrent client to download a selection of Linux distributions, you know. And if you have too many connections on that, it will absolutely floor a Virgin modem. Couldn't say whether it does it to other things, but I've tested that with a series of Linux distributions.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Also, John in the live chat says, for me, I want faster upload. This all goes to the same point that I think we're all making, is that actually our download speeds are perfectly fine, but we all suffer when it comes to uploads, which frankly is more important now than it's ever been, thanks to cloud and backing up and social media and streaming and FaceTime
video
calls
chats,
and
yeah,
Zoom calls. It's a global issue for the majority of people, at least those with even moderately decent downstreams. It's a source of constant complaints. But let us know any of your constant complaints. You know where to send them. It's hello@uktechshow.com. You can put whatever you want in the subject line. I'm going to open the email anyway, but you might as well put broadband if your email is about broadband. I've titled this third and final section, third and final for our free show, but third but penultimate for our extended full show for patrons. I've just called it This Week in Chat, because We didn't do a show last week simply because the news was depressing and monotonous and boring and all to do with COVID. And although there have been many COVID tangents to this week's show, there was at least enough for us to get excited about that it made a show worth doing. So I thought rather than not do a show this week or do one at a truncated length, why not talk about something we have done that involves tech, that's a bit gadgety, a bit geeky, and see if that stimulates some people's brain cells, which I'm sure it may. So I have two things that I was going to point out that I have done this week. One is because of a thing I've bought, and one because of a thing that I sort of bought because it's an app, but it's let me do something new. And I'm going to start with that one. It is a app for my iPad called, forgotten what it's called, actually. It's called OneCast, I believe.
Right.
And what it is it lets you play your Xbox One remotely on an iPad in your own house, admittedly, but it means that Kate can watch whatever she wants to watch. Earlier on today, I was doing it with Grand Designs. Well, she was watching Grand Designs. I was checking out Fallout 76 again. And it works great because you connect the Xbox controller still to the Xbox, and the iPad is effectively acting like a remote desktop, with the exception that you can use an on-screen controller, so you don't have to use the Xbox controller. So you can go and sit in another room. It plays sound as well as video. The picture quality is decent. It's certainly highly playable. The lag is very low on my testing. And the app cost about £12, which is quite a lot for many apps, admittedly. But well, if you're going to use it a fair bit, £12 to be able to play Xbox on your iPad, pretty good, I think. And I certainly will be... I'm certainly not seeking a refund for my £12.
Well, does that mean that really our conversation about Gears Tactics, you might be now in a position to play that?
Yes, it would, because I mean, I can play it on the PC because I have Steam, and I can do on a daily basis. Pretty much, I play PC games on my iPad through the Steam Link. I don't even have a monitor plugged into my gaming PC. It sits on top of my gaming PC, but it's plugged into an Apple TV that I play in the office. The actual gaming PC doesn't have a monitor. Mm. Everything is remote desktop. So I'm used to that as a workflow. It's just I didn't realize that it was also possible to do it on a console. So any console game that I now want to play that I just don't want to have to necessarily sit and play on a sofa, I can play on an iPad. I could play in the bath. I could play Gears 5 in a bath, which is
Is the iPad waterproof?
No, but I just simply play it above the water.
The waterline. Yeah, sure, but accidents happen. You're slippery.
I am. Wet. I know, and I know that you have first-hand experience of this, but that's for a very different show. The chat room is asking what the minimum specs for this are. The Xbox needs to be hardwired. I don't know if that is a mandatory requirement, but it's certainly a very heavily enforced suggestion that it should be hardwired via Ethernet. The Wi-Fi is just 802.11n or AC, so most modern routers should be able to deal with that. And the quality is pretty decent. It actually is officially supported in as much as the Xbox natively lets you stream to other devices. It's just it's normally limited to Windows 10 devices. So what the app does is essentially says, I am a Windows 10 device, and then the Xbox streams to it fine. And the app's been out for quite a long time, so it doesn't seem like Microsoft has any issue doing this. And
it's not really in their interest, is it? Yeah, exactly. Like they want people to enjoy their consoles. They make money when people buy games, and people who are able to play games wherever they want are more likely to buy games.
Yeah, I mean, this massively opens up my interest in doing more with my Xbox, because, as I said, most of my gaming I do on the iPad, and I like using Steam Link because then I have access to my Steam library as well as my iOS library, and I can use the same controller no matter which platform I'm using. To now be able to extend that to the Xbox is great, because I pay for Xbox Game Pass, and I have a couple of friends that mostly only play consoles. So that's been one of the things that I've been doing recently. The other is I bought two new lenses for my Sony A7R II
camera. Ah, nice.
I bought a lovely macro lens, a Sony macro, and I bought a lovely fisheye, which I've been wanting for ages.
Is it a legit
because I've always loved fisheye. Well, it's a 12mm f/2.4, so it's bloody good.
Wide. I think mine's 14 to 24, my Nikon. I love that lens so much.
Yeah, it's not a zoom lens. It's prime, and it's also manual focus. But that actually reduced the cost compared to some of the others. But the sharpness is incredible. It's made by a company called Samyang, just a Korean company. And I've had one of their lenses before and was impressed. The reviews for this one look pretty good. It's really good. I have to say, I have bought two Samyang lenses now, and I would buy a third if I had need to. So I've been really getting into extremes of photography, macro on the one end and fisheye.
You'll get some great pet photos with fisheye. Like that's
I already have. Mate.
Yeah, that's. Oh, you have ones. To put some in the Discord chat. That'd be great to see. Okay. I love a good lens. And you know what? I thought the other week it's been a while since I bought a lens, and I suppose I've got most thing covered. I've got a 60mm macro, which is good as a sort of portrait lens and good as a macro lens. That needs to be repaired. It's got the plastic ring that adjusts whether or not it's manual or automatic focus, I think, is cracked. So it's a little bit more difficult to use. It's not impossible. I've also got the, 70-200, which everyone, and this is what makes me laugh about cameras. You know, read enough information on the internet and you will get absolutely nowhere in your lens buying, purchasing choice, because everyone will have something bad to say about the lens you're thinking of. And I got on eBay a few years ago that Nikon lens, because they're very expensive. They're 1600 quid for a new one, maybe more. And I thought, well, I don't have the money for that. I need the lens. It was a part of the way I made money. Do you remember when I did New Scientist Live? I was like a social reporter and did loads of stuff on the show.
I do, yeah.
I bought the lens then, actually, and it came in immediately useful on that. On those days, so I was very glad to have it. And what's the other one I've got? And the 14-24, I think it is, Nikon, which is not a fisheye. It's relatively stable at the outer width, but it is one of their nicest lenses, and I love it. But I've not, and I was trying to think about what I would buy next. I suppose maybe an 85, as you know, like a prime.
Yeah, that's decent. I mean, we should get Andy on if we were going to talk about camera lenses.
Actually. We should get him on anyway. I miss that guy.
In fact, John literally typed the same thing at the same time in the chat room. We should get Andy on. Yes, we should do that. But with it, before we bore people who aren't interested in lenses anymore, have you done anything? Bought any interesting tech? Used anything in a new and exciting way?
I mean, yes. Yes, I have. It's been very much a period of experimentation, hasn't it? This whole thing, because, you know, like I'm at home a lot. You know, if I'm at work during the day, if I want a 10-minute break, I can often just do something.
So this is all going a bit Pornhub, mate.
No,
keep it PG.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things I tried the other day. So to explain the situation very briefly, without boring everyone to death. This flat is rented, obviously, and the broadband when I got here came into a cupboard at the end of the hall, and in there is all the AV equipment. Like they'd wired HDMI to the lounge and stuff like that. There's speaker cables going to every room, essentially, which is quite a nice setup. But that having the broadband in there was not ideal because I wanted to wire it. I won't use broadband Wi-Fi. I just hate it. Not on my computer. I mean, obviously, I don't plug a cable into my phone. That would be absurd. And they ran a cable into the room where I have my computer, and unfortunately it has been improperly wired, so it only does 100 megabit, which is nowhere near fast enough. It's ridiculous. It's like a 10 megabyte transfer speed, and I'm like, I'm having none of this. So what I did instead was I tried doing things wirelessly. So between the computer and that cupboard is now a set of BT discs, which allow me to get sort of five times that speed over wireless, but they're a bit unreliable. So the other day I tried a bunch of different stuff that I've got knocking around, and I could not get any of it to work. The only thing that does the job properly without fuss is the BT discs. I've got to say, those BT discs are pretty good. I almost hate to admit it, but they are.
They're rebranded, aren't they?
Probably. I mean, they didn't invent anything.
That makes them, that I think BT rebadged. They've rebadged it, you fool.
Well, that's what they do with everything. I mean, they don't make anything, do they? But yeah, it's...
No, I know, but I mean, like, I think you can buy them as a different brand product.
Quite possibly. I mean, it's only because I had them. I did a roundup of a bunch of these kind of things, mesh networks, some time ago. And the BT one's the only one that does it out of the box without faffing. And I tried literally two other systems, a D-Link and Linksys, and neither of them would do that point-to-point thing that I need very specifically. They just wouldn't communicate, and I was getting very frustrated with it. So that was one thing I did. The other thing I'm considering, and this is the most boring thing in the world, and I apologize for it, is buying an articulated monitor stand so I can clear up a little bit of space on my desk, because I have an ASUS monitor, and the stands that ASUS packages with its monitors are amongst the most stupid you've ever seen. They take up loads of space and achieve absolutely nothing. I mean, I suppose they give it as a low center of gravity. You know, they make it so it's stable, but at the same time, they take up all of the desk, all of it.
You know what? An articulated stands is something I have recently found a love for. I bought two of them made by Ugreen, and I use it with my iPad either as a second monitor next to my Mac when I'm working, or it's the reason why gaming on the iPad is decent for me, because I actually just have one in front of me and I just move it closer to my face.
Yeah.
Instead of having a large TV further away from my face. So I've got two, and we're almost on the brink of buying a third because Kate uses them now in her office as well.
Well,
great.
If you want to get something that's really good and it will cost you some real money, and I'm talking hundreds, there's a company called Human Scale that makes arms and furniture, it appears, and they are chef's kiss. Mwah. Beautiful, really stylish, and probably will hold a good load, if you see what I mean, without wishing to make this a podcast.
Yes. Well, we've had an interesting few things in the chat room that people have been buying. People buying a lot of Apple products, which shows the nature of our listenership. But I wanted to pick out John, who said he has bought something. It's 35 quid, and it is a little Amazon mini blink security camera, which he uses for spotting when Amazon delivery drivers are approaching when he's in the garden, which is an incredibly meta purchase if you think about it. Mm. Buying something from Amazon branded to spot Amazon branded people. But that's great. And Richard in the chat room didn't say he was incredibly stupid, but I assume he meant to say that because he bought a Dyson hairdryer. Now, I've used one of those Dyson hairdryers because my friend Lexi has one, and I'll tell everyone what I told her. It's an overpriced hairdryer. You shouldn't have bought it.
Yes.
But I hope you took great joy from the purchase because, you know, it is at least nice looking, even if it is functionally
useless,
bad value.
I wouldn't support that man. He's now the richest man in the UK. Oh well, that's funny how that worked out for him, isn't it? Anyway, moving on.
Yes, well, he certainly moved on. That will do it for this week's news, unless you're a patron and listening to the long version, because then we have an entire other story in a minute. But for everybody else, let's hear some music or something.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
We now need to check in with Mr. Tom Merritt of Daily Tech News Show and hear what's been going on in the wider world of global tech. Tom.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Charlotte Henry helped us wrap our heads around your UK contact tracing app approach. We analyzed Twitter's new approach to battling COVID-19 misinformation, talk about how to have good etiquette on video conference calls. Chris Mancini took a look at whether we'll go back to the theaters or just stay streaming at home. And we looked up close at the new U.S. trade restrictions on Huawei and TSMC's new U.S. factory. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
That is going to do it for this week, Ian. I hope you're well and staying safe and happy and
everything. I mean, completely lost my mind, obviously. But, you know, apart from that, I'm alive and healthy. I've eaten too many sausages. That's
haven't
a problem.
We all? What is your sausage brand of choice, by the way?
Well, I've recently been... what are they called? I'd have to go to the kitchen to answer this question. There's a brand that makes a decent sausage. It's...
Heck?
It might be, actually. Yeah, it might be.
Black Farmer?
No, I think it might be Heck.
Heck is a 97% pork sausage.
Ah, right,
sausage.
Okay. Yes, that's quite good.
It's a great sausage. That's what I get. I love the Heck. You know, they're an independent as well, so you're not giving any money to Big Sausage.
Big Sausage.
So to speak. but the other good one that I like is Black Farmer. Black Farmer,
right.
Make a great sausage. Both are gluten-free as well. So for those of you who are gluten avoiders, then they're a good one.
Well, number of people who are gluten intolerant is quite small. Not that I'm saying that's not a good reason, but also, if you can't tell, then why is there gluten in there? Doesn't need to be, does it?
Apparently not. No, Heck
no.
Is a great sausage.
Yes.
Well, if you would like to tell us what sausage you have been eating recently, do obviously send it to the usual place, hello@uktechshow.com. And with a bit of luck, we will see you with a dollop of ketchup, and it must be Heinz, and it must be refrigerated, next week.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then... Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.